Johnson cuts in. Now he's got Connor in front of him. He sidesteps Connor.
He's off.
Sidesteps
and he's off.
He's gone.
Go on, Johnson. Go on, Johnson.
Tom Johnson.
Go on, Johnson.
He'll try from his own try line. He has just gone 100 metres to surely win the game for the Wakefield Trinity Wildcats.
Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with Richard Shawright.
That seems such a long time ago now. That happened. I think it was back at Easter, wasn't it, Gary?
Well, talking on the radio, getting excited. He's always trying to say, Rich.
Are you saying that's the last time the 2016 Rugby League season was exciting?
One of the most exciting points. One of the early doors at this moment. This moment in time, you may say there's not a lot of quality about, but anyway.
We're only joking. We've had an exciting weekend of Rugby League. Gary Schofield is here. Phil Kaplan is here. Phil, how excited are you on a scale of 2 to 9?
There's only one team that's excited me this year, and that's Castleford.
Well, that's good then, isn't it? Because Steve
Hill is here.
It's almost like we've thrown this programme together. Steve, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. And Mark Wilson is here, and he's making the teas. I think he's finally found
his true vocation.
If you want to get in touch with us, any questions on anything, at RL on RY, at Radio Underscore Yorkshire, if you look back on the weekend in Rugby League. In the qualifiers, of course, we've seen the Leeds Centurions promoted to Super League, so we will lose one of either Hulkingston Rovers, Huddersfield or Salford. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Warrington at the top of the table, Hull's second defeat after Wembley, and our St Helens, the team to keep an eye on, as perhaps going on to win at Old Trafford.
Can we talk about whether football's attractive anymore or not?
What, football? Or
no,
rugby
no.
Football?
Rugby football. There's only one football. One rugby, code of football.
Rugby football.
Mm.
You can't. Well, we know a team who is attractive.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? But we have these stereotypical views, and we think that Super League is the league that is open and expansive and prides its attack rather than its defence, and we signify the NRL in the reverse. We think that's all structured and overly physical and all about the wrestle. I think this weekend was a perfect example that actually it's falling in the reverse at the moment. I don't know how many people saw Penrith play against Canterbury, but their back division is everything that is exciting about rugby league. Even caused the great Peter Stirling to say, you know, this is why we watch rugby league. And I think we're in danger with a lot of what we do at the moment, the number of games that we play, the fact that there is things like promotion relegation that is a real inhibitor, and that we're in danger of becoming, apart from Castleford and Warrington, a little bit dull to watch, whereas the Aussies have got a lot of young kids in the backs who are moving the ball. They've realised that you don't want to keep the ball around the wrestle area in the middle. What you want to do is move it wide and have young and exciting players that want to play with the ball. And it was just a real wake up this weekend that the pendulum has swung the other way.
Yeah, I'll tell you what as well though, Phil, and I'll say we've got Steve Gill here from the Casper Tigers, who's the chief executive, and just a point here I'd like to touch on first before I ask Steve, because Steve was, you know, you was at the performance man down at Casting, so you've dealt with the youngsters coming up to 18, 19 years of age. But one point here I'll make up is, you know, the frustration what Jamie Jones Buchanan is finding out about the game now. You know, he's saying he's getting disillusioned with the game. Certainly the way the wrestling is, the way the grappling is, the way all the messing around with the ruck area, and he's getting totally frustrated. But so Steve, you know, you was involved with all the kids and the way the game is going. You know, how when you was coming through with the juniors, how did you see that with the kids? And were they enjoying what they was doing from a point of view when you look at all this wrestling? Or was you, as a performance coach, certainly with 18, 19, was you a guy, well, I want you to play expansive rugby league?
Yeah, that's the way we played Castleford anyway.
Yeah.
But even then, we didn't spend much time, as you probably know, Gary. We've only just got a wrestle room, probably the last 2 years.
Well, get rid of it. You don't need it. Get rid of it.
So if they didn't any wrestling, it was out on our ground, at training field.
Yeah.
So it wants something we spend a lot of time on. We like give you natural skills. I think wrestling is taught into a player at a later day. But we taught natural flair, natural skills, natural ability. I mean, we two kids who always stand out to me were natural ability were young Ryan Brayley and Ben Johnson, and they were probably the two of finest halfbacks I'd seen at under-20s.
Yeah.
They played well together and, you know, and they went different ways. But to watch them play were really exciting. And you should never stifle rugby league and never try and grapple it and make sure it's a game that it's defence orientated. I think rugby league is a game that's played and enjoyed and flamboyant. It's tough enough without the wrestle, the squeak, because everybody gets a little cheating there by doing something they shouldn't do.
Absolutely.
And injuries are caused and that, you know, you should be quick plate balls and let's get on with it. It's a quick enough game as it is, and if they're not fit enough, they're not quick enough. But I think you've seen how Daryl plays it, and you know it's entertaining to watch. And, you know, we've been saying it, Cass, you know, we'll sell you a season ticket at seat, but you're only always going to your edge of it. And that's what we do. Yep. You know, we want people to come because they think, phew, that was the best 18 minutes I've seen.
But it's a shame that you're now the exception rather than the rule. And I think one thing that has made a huge difference in Australia, and I think we probably haven't given it enough credit, is having two referees. Because the second referee polices the ruck, and over the last couple of years their ruck speed has got quicker and there's been less messing around in that part of the field. And suddenly the teams that we're all watching and enjoying, the Canberras particularly, Penrith, saying the way they're playing at the moment, even North Queensland and Brisbane, we love watching these teams because they're moving the ball through the backs, and we're losing the essence of British Rugby League.
To be fair, Phil, over the last... you probably picked this up, but it's only this year we seem to have an influx of no referees, and you know the RFL have done something about that, and we didn't have enough referees to police Super League games.
It is an issue, but I think that's what's helped in Australia, that we've got somebody whose focus is solely on not messing around at the ruck.
I agree, and that had its critics early doors, but now it's just accepted. You don't realise there's two referees on.
Absolutely.
I watched the Canberra and Cronulla game over the weekend. I thought that was a great game to watch. I had a bit of a festive interest in that one as well. So I really enjoyed that. But that they got two referees and just didn't notice they were on at all.
No. And I think Jamie Jones for Buchanan's comments are interesting, because he's talking about the drop to the floor that's just killing the ball.
But the reason why I brought it up is quite simple. We have to start taking note of what players are saying. Mm-hmm. You know, they won't listen to players from my era. They won't listen to me. And I say, when I look at the players from my era, the experience was gone. You know, I think there's Dennis Betts involved, Darrell's involved, Crooks is involved. But apart from that, everybody else has gone. So what they're going to start doing now, they've got to start listening to players from this era who've been a part of Super League. Because if not, the game's just going to get worse. There's only two teams for mine who play the right way. We say it week in and week out on this show. We're not saying it because Steve's here. You know, we say Castleford, where they coach once again, playing Darryl Powell, and also two Tony Smith there at Warrington.
Enough,
but we have to start listening to what ex-players are saying.
And both of them were halfbacks.
Well, there you go, then. There's your answer.
You look at
the backroom staff at Castleford.
I think that's part of it.
You know, we Ryan Sheard and Danny Orr there, you know. So, but we have to start, you know, and I think I've said it a couple of times, and I say to people, when I do say to people, oh, Scott, you're a dinosaur, you don't know what you're talking about. There needs to be a think tank of ex-players of how the game should be going, because I can reassure you, right, my philosophy is, and it always will be, you score more points for the opposition, you win the game. Don't matter how good you are at the wrestle, don't matter how you're good defensively, you know. Does that make sense? You score more points in the opposition, you win. And let players be coached.
I think
be skillful.
There has to be a balance.
But hold on, skill and speed will always beat size and power.
And we saw a game that had huge significance on Saturday that was a points fest between Lee and Huddersfield. I think again,
when they play smart, attractive rugby league in the first half.
Yeah, but I think even by when Lee have stopped celebrating, and let's hope it goes on for at least another month, because they deserve it, they will look at their defensive performance in the second half and say it can't just be all touch and pass. There has to be an element of defence. But I just think we've gone too far the other way, and I don't know what Steve thinks. It'd be interesting to know. I think that's partly down to the number of games we play. So you've got a balance. You've got this incredibly difficult balance that, as a chief executive, you've got to get a certain amount of income through the gate, which will be determined by the number of games that you play. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, your only and most precious asset are the players, and you've got to protect them a little bit. And getting that balance right is really, really difficult.
It is. I mean, there's two ways you look at it. I mean, we're talking about moving salary cap up, but sometimes you can only generate so much money. So you've got to have a big investor who can back you up, but then there's also liability. If you just walk away, you're saddled with debts. You know, we've just gone 3 years without anybody putting any money in. We've been self-sufficient now for just over 3 years. And, you know, we've got a squad, I think, next year will challenge for honours. I do believe we could have done it this year if we had the amount of injuries.
But are the injuries commensurate with the number of games we play? Because we played 30 games for the first time last year.
Mm.
Your off-season is considerably shortened because of that. And then you've got 30 games to play this year, plus your Challenge Cup commitments, with a squad of, ideally, 26 players, if you can do it. 28, 29, if you want to feed in some of your youngsters. 32 if you have to then go into the academy ranks. It's asking a hell of a lot of your players.
It is, and that's probably why, you know, we've gone with a bigger squad than usual, so we can rotate them. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to do it this year. So it is probably getting a squad of about 30 together, and being brave enough, a bit like Leeds have done, is to put those young kids in and give them a chance, not holding back. When we've been down to bare bones, it's cost us an extra £120,000 this year to bring players in, loan players, an early signing to get to where we need it to be, because I would have hated to be in that middle eights with the squad as decimated as it is against a good league, good Huddersfield, good Leeds, good Ulster sides. You know, you just start to thinking that we don't really need it. So to us, it was a good investment. But Thursday night were great for me because I saw a young kid called Dougie come through, Dung Douglas, and he did what all forwards should do. He run hard, he carried hard, he tackled hard. He couldn't breathe after the first tackle, but everything he did then after that was just superb. And he just earned himself another 2-year contract, which I thought was fantastic.
But at the end of the day as well, Steve, they all want opportunities, don't they?
Kids do.
Yeah, there's no point saying, well, he's only 18, 19, 20, he's not ready for it. We won't know until you're given the opportunity. Okay, at times they may be given the opportunity due to injuries, but I'll tell you what, if they're good enough, they're old enough, aren't they?
Yeah, he probably won't got a, if Oliver Holmes hadn't been ill at night and pulled out on morning at game, he might not have got that opportunity. But speaking to Daryl today, when they finished game, the first team, the old first team squad gave me a round of applause, and I thought that kid felt a mile high, wouldn't he? That's something that is unique, I think. They'd give him a round of applause, all loved him, and he'd have been proudest man in the set.
Well, again, you never forget your debut, it doesn't matter who you play against. But also, you mentioned a young kid there, Ryan Briley, you know, who's going to Huddersfield now, and I tell you what, have you got a feel for him? Because he's going to be thrown the scrap heap at Huddersfield now. Rick Stone doesn't rate him. He thinks he's an absolute luxury. Well, let me just say this to Rick Stone, and I don't know what you was like as a player in Australia, but I'll tell you what, if you had a bit of talent like Ryan Briley had, you would be thrown on the scrap heap. And what I've heard about him is Rick Stone reckons he's just a bit of a luxury, and all he does is score tries. Well, I can remember a coach say that about me, in Phil Larder. He said, well, I can't understand this score for you, all he does is score tries. Well, I'll tell you what, that's what he's supposed to do, isn't he? And young Briley, the vision what he's got and his support play, and as I say, certainly he could score tries from 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 metres. I feel so sorry for that young kid. And we're having a young Australian here assessing one of our best individual talents, and the kid's going to be on the scrap heap.
Yeah, I watched him. I mean, we signed him on at 16-year-old at Gassen. He sent us some old VHS videos, and he was so thin it was unbelievable. And we brought him over, and at that moment, that time, we got Chris Chester doing our under-20s. And Chris saw him, we were up at Cass Academy on our weather pitch, and he did some stuff in training, and Chris says he's got a big future in game. And I also remember that not long after that, and once he's, I don't know if he will ever fill out, he's just a natural beanpole, isn't he?
Yeah.
But his ability to support, he's a freak when it comes to support,
he's got a vision and awareness,
he's got a great passing game, he's got a very good kicking game. I can remember one of Mark's comments when he dropped a goal from about 50 yards out, and he just turned around and he says, Ryan Briley has got ice running through his veins. And he's cool under pressure. He's a unique talent. And he don't deserve any flack, but the kid can play.
No, he can. Cass be interested in if he comes on the market. I'm sure Dal would look at him, wouldn't he? Have you got room on the salary cap? Because he's going to become available.
I don't think that Ryan had walked to Cass every day if he could. Unfortunately, at this moment in time, we're quite well stacked with halfbacks and fullbacks.
Yeah, you've signed Greg Eden as well at fullback, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah.
And Rangi's return is a fabulous story, because again, it was one of the ones that I believe, you know, was mutually beneficial for both of you, just to see how it went in the short term. But You've got a different player.
Yeah, we have. Apparently, he's got a fair bit of stick today in one of the papers, saying that he's stealing a living at Cassock moment in time, and of a well publicist journalist. And you know, they've got to understand where Rangi's come from. From February last year, he hadn't played. He probably sat on the sofa for 4 months in a bad place. You know, we've given him a real good chance of coming back. He's come more or less straight back into the first team after 2 or 3 weeks training. If anybody saw the tattle he put on Manfredi, or the tattle over at Warrington that he put on their centre, you just think that, you know, he's not here to play. He's not here to play games. Rangi's come to earn and get yourself back to where it was. And it was never about this season for us, because we know you just cannot get that fitness back in the type of training we're doing this time in season. And Rangi will be the player that we expect him to be next year.
How did that move come about, Steve? I think it surprised a lot of people when it happened, Rangi coming back to Cass. How did it come about?
He kept friends with Daryl, and he'd always wished him good luck and that, and then he'd drop off for a week or two, and then and we went over to Wigan Challenge Cup, and he texted Alan. He says, you know, good luck, mate, I'm, you know, thinking of you. And we got...
I do that with Alan every week, but he don't give me a phone call a second off of a 3-year deal, Scully. Do you think he'll give me a 3-year deal?
Scully, I get your text, and it's usually for free tickets.
Well, yeah, well.
Oh, there you go.
I've got some friends who are Cass fans, believe it or not. Scully's got some friends who are Cass fans. Yeah. But yeah, Steve sorts me out for a couple of tickets every home game.
And, where it am from there, so Daryl gets his text. And what we'd done at that time, we'd lost Benny Roberts, and Tom Holmes had had a shoulder injury which was really bad, and as soon as we could we got it operated on. But also as well, we got the situation where we were losing got Luke Gale for a few weeks with ankle injury.
Hold on. Now this is Scully's phone. Shall we answer? Oh, it's Gary Etherington. Shall we answer it? It is. Yeah. Oh, it's Gary Etherington's ringing. Shall we put it on speakerphone and answer it?
It's a 3-year deal.
It's not a 3-year deal.
He don't want me to go, Cass. It's a 3-year deal.
I've turned it off now. That's you fine. That's half your match fee gone, Scully.
So anyway,
yeah, we'll get there eventually, anyway, Steve.
So we're in a situation now where we got chance of losing Luke Gale. He'd gone over on his ankle a few times, and I didn't fancy going into this tail end of the season because we still hadn't secured Super League status at that time. And he says, look, can we make it happen, Steve? And we had a couple of meetings, myself and Mark Grattan, and see how we could do it. And Rangi's passion was to come back to Cass. And, you know, we looked him in the eye and spoke to him, a different Rangi chase than what left. And he said, look, we need this to happen from our side as well. And I also remember the cheer he got when he came up field against Warrington, and it was unbelievable. I've just had a text off Michelle, our media, saying you didn't tell me you were going to announce Dougie tonight. It's old news now. So
there you go.
Yeah, that's
there you
a separate tongue. But nothing signed yet, Michelle.
Oh, hold on. He can't. So Gary Etherington's just been up for him. We've got Leeds now.
So I do apologise for that.
Quick, I mean, obviously, because in here, we were worried. We thought it's a gamble. But like you said, the Rangi, interesting, Daryl said to us last week when we spoke to him, people's reputation are sometimes worse than what the reality is. He had his best years at Cass, and no doubt with hindsight, it's a wonderful thing. Rangi probably would have never left. Did he have to leave? Was it a money thing from a Cass point of view, or was it Rangi wanting to better himself or maybe earn a few more pounds?
I think it was a case that it was best for all round at that time, financially and for Rangi. And the second time round, we hope it works. I think he passionately hopes it works as well. But at that moment in time, I believe it had to happen for both parties. So.
Yeah.
What I would say as well, because it's a chance of a free advert, is in the new 40/20 magazine out this week.
Right,
which I've got.
You've got
a three-page interview with Rangi.
Okay,
done by Angela Powers, and I think anybody that thinks he's stealing a living needs to read that interview, because where Rangi's been and his life values now are completely different to where he was. And without spoiling the interview, it was about the trappings of success, which are very hard to deal with. But it's now about what's important in life. And I think there's a perfect mix between what Castleford offer as a club and what Rangi needs as a person. And I think it comes out in that interview. But also, I don't know why any players would leave Cass. Because one of the things that, that you've got, irrespective of league position, is the fact that we're too trite in the sport about saying it's a family game, because we never define what family means. But one of the things Cass seemed to have is a coach that makes players better. And also a desire to put your arm around players when they do need you. And I think, again, that's not just because you're here. I think that's what makes Cass one of everybody else's second favourite teams. The way you play, but also the way you look after players.
I think we had to do that. I think we did that. It wasn't something just happened overnight, because obviously, as Gary alluded to, I worked Eddie Youth for so many years. But I've been at Cass since 2000, and I've seen things happen at Cass. I thought, well, I'd do that different. Now, I'm no financial wizard. You know, anything with me downfall, it's always money. And if you ask me now, I've probably got about £3 in my pocket, and that's not because I spend it. It's just got no. I don't even bother with
you're
it.
You're like the Queen, aren't you? You don't carry
yeah,
it.
Yeah, don't carry it.
Like Scully.
No, like Mark Wilson. Boy, oh boy, is it like Mark Wilson.
Sorry, Steve, you like to get you. We do generally just shout at each other for
2 hours. I don't listen to your show again. So, my thing, we're a united club, you know, from fans, season ticket offer, everything through to make us proud again. I wanted fans to be proud at club, and I wanted the club to be proud at fans. And only by doing that is giving them an involvement any way you can, and making sure that they feel valued. And we've got a unique ground that allows you to do that. You know, the concourse at the back of the main stand, there's not many clubs got that, where they can meet players, they can and feel the value of them. And we have open days with them where we can come and ask any questions they wish, and any question that they answer me, I'll answer them. This year I ring up and thank them for having the season tickets. I spend hours in my conservatory ringing them up on a night and saying thank you for renewing. I don't believe you should ring them and ask them to renew it, but I believe you should thank them for renewing it, because a family of four or any person who spends money for a season, which is a lump sum in today's day and age and is considerable, is as much as somebody spending company's money. So I believe they should be valued as well, and it's putting them values back into club as key stakeholders. I do believe that as attendance has grown, and we still have blips, but we want to put a product out on there. If you went to a restaurant and you had a meal there and it was poor, you won't go again. And if you pay consumer, and that's what. But I want fans to come and enjoy not only the rugby league that we've got on show, but being part of, I think, the best family club in Super League. Mm-hmm. And we're working towards that. And it's a slow burn all the time, but that's where we have to push it.
New ground, Steve. I want you to stay at Jungle. I just want one ground improvement. Can you knock that window out at the end of the stand? Because we cannot see the big screen from the press box.
Yeah, right? Hopefully they'll get rid of the video referee, so we don't have to strain us next.
Or wash the window. That's the other thing.
We must say that from a press point of view, it's the best food you've pulled for the press. Best food going there. And to be honest with you here, I'm looking at maybe a new career myself, because as everybody knew, I did a bit of refereeing this weekend, Steve. It doesn't look like I'm going to get my 3-year deal. Having said that, I'm going to speak to Gary Everton. There might be a 2-year deal on there. You might have heard the interview. But at the weekend, Steve, I did a bit of refereeing for a young kid, Archie, who's not very well. And we looked to raise a few quid. And I did pretty well, actually. I kept up with all the play, and it was for an hour.
Did you slow the play the ball down to keep up with you?
Not really, to be honest with you. It was for an hour. We played four 15-minute quarters, and played in the right spirit. You know, they threw the ball around a little bit, going for a few chip over the tops and interceptions, which I encouraged them, even as a referee. But I tell you what, there was somebody just yapping and yapping all the time. So I thought, I'm having you. Actually, he had a Cass shirt on as well. So I thought, yeah, I'm having you. So anyway, so there was 6 minutes to go. I said, come here. I've had enough of your lip. He went, well, what do you mean? I said, all you've been doing, you're giving me this and you're giving me that. I says, there's 6 minutes to go. You go in it bin for 2 minutes. So I put him in bin for 2 minutes. He stuck a bent to the edge, he's straight in his moment. Scully, I wish you'd have said that about 20 minutes ago. I've been wanting one of these. But he come back on for the 4 minutes. But Mark Wilson now is just going to read out what money
we've
made.
There's 587 quid, and you can add to it. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, we obviously heard about this young man, little boy, and he was not
Yeah, Archie's not very well. He's got, nobody knows what syndrome he's got, but they're testing his parents for DNA. They don't know what it is, but the kid's not very well, and what it is, they're looking to raise funds to turn the house where the parents go into a facility where he's got the home comforts. You know, so that's where all the money's going there to little Archie there, and if you can read out from there.
Yeah, it's for like a century room and things
like
that.
Yeah, for a century room, just to make his life a lot better for himself. But one thing for sure, everybody who turned up on Saturday to watch, I think there's about 80 people there. It was all in the right spirit. They was giving money into the buckets from there. The players played it in the right spirit, and I tell you what, if the referee could have got the medal of the match, they got the medal of the match.
Is it too late to make a donation,
Gary? Yeah, it's just on there, Steve.
Can we donate a signed shirt for
Thank you. Oh, yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, yes, great, Steve. Because the people are listening, Archie's parents are listening here again, yeah, so you've just heard it there, Steve Gill from Casper Tigers, donating a signed shirt, great. Yeah.
Well, we'll tweet out the link as well, but it is gofundme.com, ADCFB8QS. We'll tweet that out at RL on RY. But yeah, well done. The report's weird, obviously, Rich. Vastly different to the one we've got from Scully. I heard he's not making the list for the Rugby League referees next year.
Is he not?
No.
Not even when we go to two referees. We're going to need some people to fill in.
We are.
I tell you what, lads, as well. There's some new lads, but I tell you what, there's some sides.
Who won anyway? The old ones or the young ones?
The older ones. The older ones won 11-9. Just a little bit more.
11-9.
11-9. We didn't have goal kicks and all like that and what have you. But
I thought we got really old.
11-9. But I tell you what, though, there's a couple of young lads who like to go, 50, 60 yards, and I'm like, slow down, will you? I've got to run that distance to bring these back another 5 yards. But no, it's all played in good spirit, and I say it's all for a great cause. And if we can make Archie's life a lot better, by hopefully getting this room built at home, then I say great. So if people want to donate, we just sort of say Steve Gill there donating a signed Casford shirt. His parents are listening, so he's James from Bennett's Meat, who organised it all. Everybody who took part, thank you very much, and I really enjoyed it.
Good stuff. We've had lots of tweets coming in at RL on RY. We've got a few questions for Steve as well. We'll get to them in a minute. If you've got any questions, then do get in touch. I put out a tweet earlier on regarding the £1 million game because I am a bit worried that we've got the game, or we think we're going to get the game that we all want, and that's two Super
Actual
League clubs.
The jeopardy
that the RFL wanted, they have got now. Lee, credit to them. Well done to Lee Centurion's got up. Two Super League clubs. The game's going to be on at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, I believe. It's not going to get seen. It's theatre. It needs to be on at 7:30 on a night where everyone can watch it and see, because whoever watches sport, right, and I watch sport for, obviously, to be entertained and see great skill, but I watch it to see how people perform under pressure. And let's be fair, we're all going to be tuned in to see the misery, the heartache and the joy, and that's why we want to see it. And at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, when there's millions of people watching football, listening to football, it's not going to be seen by enough people, my opinion.
This week, Lee's promotion was completely ignored by our broadcast partner's Twitter feed when they were tweeting about Juventus and French football. So if they can miss that, they're probably going to miss this as well.
I think you're right. From another angle, we complain that we don't get enough column inches, but Lee's achievement was all over the Sunday papers because there was something reportable. It wasn't run of the mill. It was joy. It was ecstasy. It was the completion of a journey. It's what sport's all about. It has to have narrative. Well, you're going to have another game that has all of those dramatic elements. So surely you've got to sell it to the widest possible audience. Even if you were first utility, you would want that game to be played in a point where their name gets mentioned to more people more often. I don't know what the broadcast arrangements are. It's back to the piper calling the tune, and it may well be that that slot on the Saturday afternoon is the defined championship slot. But one thing we've talked about on here is that people now want to see events. It's not necessarily always about committing yourself to be a season ticket holder, and it goes back to, again, what Steve was saying, that those who do it should be overvalued, because what the general sport fan wants is to go to something or watch something that has meaning outside of whether they support the team or not. So yes, we have to make this an event in the same way that we would make Wembley an event, or the Millennium Magic Weekend an event, or the Grand Final an event. This is now an event. Don't play it in the cupboard where nobody can see it.
That's my worry. It's just going to be locked away. And he's a Wakefield fan, Steve. We don't hold it against him. But Wakey Cass, I can still remember. I had no allegiance to either club watching that. The pub was packed, people watching.
The ground was packed.
They wanted to see what was going to happen. And that's what it's going to be like. We're going to lose a Super League club. This is a big event in rugby league. And it just seems to me, you know, that we're not going to, not enough people are going to watch it.
Yeah, I would have guessed to Michael Carter at the last £1 million game over at Bellevue when they beat Bradford. And the emotions that that guy went through, to do what, to get to where he got to the end of the year, and this unnecessary grief he got were unbelievable. But the relief by making sure that they were in Super League were there for hell to see. And I would hate to think that you're going into that £1 million game with any injuries, or going into the middle eights with any injuries, as I've said. But I think for me now, the middle eights has become far more interesting than the Super Eights, and that is worrying. Because if you just scrape in into the Super 8s now, the format that it's in doesn't give you a real chance of going to the grand final. I believe they need to be structured and scaled where you get the league leader shield after round 23, you're presented with it, you're done, and then there's some type of scaling down, whether the guys who finish top get 8 points, the guys who finish second get 7 and go down. Or we look at a revamp of that, because I think everybody should be able to challenge once they go in there. So if that's the way they're going to go, if they're going to persevere with it, we just need to look at it. But I think that'll happen after next year, usually in 3 years, and then they change it. But as Michael will tell you, it's hard to sell games now when, they alluded to on Sky the other day, if Sky are announcing that certain games are dead rubber games, how can that be?
Well, also as well, Steve, right, and I say when Cass played Hull, I think when you were down at Weldon Road, I think about 2 months ago now, Sunday afternoon, 3:30 kickoff.
Great
game. The place was absolutely, it's like the owner days going down Weldon Road from the big roundabout, literally 3 or 4 deep each side and what have you. And again, you're just talking here with television from there, and like with Michael Carson, and as we know with Cass, we didn't wait for it, you know, you need as much money as we can get and get the crowd from the turnstiles. Changing the game on Thursday night against Hull. Hull would have brought, they're still going for the top of the table, they would have brought on a Sunday afternoon, they would have brought 2,500, 3,000. How much money is it costing Michael on Thursday night?
Well, it cost, we were 3,500 down on the Wakefield like for like attendance.
Yeah.
And we got to know 11 days prior the thing. So, I mean, my argument was, how can you sell a game in hospitality? So, just in case of change here, we can't sell any tickets 11 days prior. Our commercial manager Chris Powell, he's selling tickets well in advance. As soon as the announced fixtures, he's selling, and Wakefield's pretty much.
Well, that's the job, isn't it? That's what they should be doing.
But to lose 33% down, there's something wrong. And it wants a TV game. We've moved it from Sunday to Friday night, so I could give my best chance of going to St Helens on Thursday with a team that's busted. Because all of a sudden, then they tell us we could play on a Sunday if we wanted, but. We're in round 26. These players now are on the last legs.
Mm.
And yet, all of a sudden, player welfare goes out of window then. And I find that hard to stomach. I'm struggling immensely to find out a reason why that game was played, because St Helens won on that night, so there was no point in us playing it. You know, it was just, it was a crazy fixture for me. And it's something that they need to get right, otherwise it's costing clubs thousands.
Oh, it is, absolutely.
And there is no reason why they can't look at the Super 8 fixtures when they're drawn. There's an issue about them, you not being able to plan your last 7 fixtures of the season anyway, but when they are announced, every television fixture should be announced at the same time. And if it ends up that supposedly there is a game that doesn't have as much meaning, I think it's disingenuous for anybody to say it doesn't matter. I mean, I just think that's a ridiculous thing. And it bit Wigan on the bum last week anyway, when they said the game against Widnes didn't matter. It mattered a hell of a lot to Widnes. There's no reason why you can't look at those fixtures where the league table is after week 23 and say the last round of fixtures Hull are going to be playing Warrington. The likelihood is where those two teams are, we need to have a television camera there and give you all of your 7 fixtures with the television dates locked in, and then you just don't have to move anything. It just seems that that's a minimum requirement.
Yeah, I think you owe it to your fans to give every game, no matter what, no matter where you are, your best shot. And if you don't, then, like I say, it's going back to that restaurant, do you undercook the food, do you just don't do it, and it's not good practice. I mean, after that game, I got a lot of emails telling me that people were not going to long renew the season ticket because of that. And because of the Sky moving them back, and you know, I've got an argument saying, look, it, in tar doing, you're hurting club. if you want to do something, stop your Sky subscription. Don't hurt the club. Mm. And you know, but we'll battle on to get as many Sunday games as we can, and we did all last year. We got it right. But the Super 8s, and maybe there's a way around that, is making sure they're all played on a Thursday and Friday. I don't know, but as a family club, I think we should stick to Sundays when kids can get down. They could be home for tea and everything else, and we should encourage clubs to play in an afternoon when kids can get, because if we lose that, there were an incident, I don't know if you noticed it, and I'm probably talking out of school there, but I'm watching the Huddersfield and League game, and they kept panning in on Huddersfield, and a lot of them were the older generation, a lot of older fans. I don't know if you noticed that, and you know, and you should be looking, you know, when we go, we see a lot of young kids there following them, and that's what we should be looking at, you know. Mm. That we're fetching young kids, and we've got something going on down at Castleford now where we were encouraging families to come down to club, and it's got Family Rugby League. And what we're going to do on back of that is coaches, Dad or Danny, and players are going to take coaching sessions with kids, and we're going to encourage them to how to play game, assess them, how to eat healthy, what to get out. We're trying to get them back out in parks, we're trying to get them back on playing fields. And we spent hours, you know, we threw coach down, didn't we, for rugby posts, and we play half time, till dinner time, and then tea time or full time and things like that. We just play, and we don't see it anymore. We don't see this type of activities anymore. They're always in the bedrooms playing on computer games, and we're losing kids' and parents' interest in being with the kids.
Every sport's going through that. I mean, you said last year, I think, that the eights had cost you £100,000.
Yeah, like for like fixes, yeah.
Is it going to be similar this year for you? Because, again, something's wrong with the format if a club is losing money.
It is, but I can't get an answer for it. Mm. I cannot get, you know, it's just that it's acknowledged and we need to do something better. Well, moving that fixture back like they did, it cost us probably about £45,000 on the fixture. And the other game we've got Widnes at home, we're not expecting to lose too much in that, because obviously it's Luke Dawn's, Lee Jewett, San Frankie Mariano's farewell.
And we could finish fifth,
yeah. And so for us, we got Wigan at home as well in the and that's I don't get a Castle come to watch us beat Wigan, and you know, that were another good night for us. So but it's one of them things, you know. It's I would say we're down probably about 50,000-60,000 now, and you know, clubs like Castleford, you can't afford to lose that. And we'd already spent 120,000 on making sure that we were in Super 8s by bringing in the likes of Danny Tickle, Lam Patrick, Paddy Flynn, Rangi Chase, you know, making sure that we've got a competitive side.
In terms of the number of matches, and again it's a debate we have a lot, would it help you to have less games on a fixed date that you could promote more, or would you still see us going with more games, but the downside of that is you've got to move the dates sometimes?
For us, Phil, it's your limit, because of the size of us, what we've got in hospitality, you're very limited. You know, it's not like Leeds have got the big, they can open everything out. You know, we have got a limited amount we can get in, and we usually do pretty well in filling that if we've given time to do it. The only downside of it is the less games you have. I mean, if that one game were like losing a Wigan or a Wakefield or God forbid it Leeds Rhinos, you know, they're massive for us, they're key games for us, they're good attenders. You know, there is some less, like Catalans, it won't bother me if we never saw them, you know. Can I say that? You know, but
I don't think it's Radio Catalan.
Yeah, but it's just they don't bring anything. You know, our fans will spend hundreds and thousands of pounds going over to Catalans to support them as every other bud, but we never get that same support back, and it's difficult. That isn't for us financially, apart from what we bring, it is a dead rubber game in terms of trying to sell the game to the French.
Unless they were top of the league and it was a top two clash or something.
But then it would predominantly Castleford Tigers fans that come.
But that would be great, you know, that, if you could fill your stadium with more Castleford fans, because the away fans weren't there. I just think, I don't know what the answer is, although I think by the end of this season, this programme will have a formula to debate, because I've got some ideas, but I think we'll wait till the end of the season. I just think less better marketed, which is contingent for you upon a stadium where you can generate more corporate income, or your current stadium being able to open in more areas to generate more.
And I think that's why, you know, we
and less games is the way ahead.
We'll agree to differ on that, Phil, but and I understand what you're saying, but for us, the new stadium might make it a lot different, and then we could probably look at that in a different way. And so, but 23 Super League games, Challenge Cup, we did it in 2014, we played every game, every weekend, and that's tough. We were very fortunate that year that we didn't get many injuries, and then we dropped away when we did get them. So, but it goes to show even best teams, you know, the likes of Leeds and Huddersfield have had their fair share of injuries, and this year it does hurt you. I can remember me and you speaking to Earl Crabtree at Headingley start of the season, we were talking about, and I hope we just don't get any injuries, because the squad's not that big.
It was thin. But the danger is, if you increase your squad, as you were saying, particularly with young debutants, now where does Dougie play next year? Because if everybody's fit that you hope will be fit, let's say he was at the age where he was a non-academy player anymore.
Yeah.
What more do we need to do to A, keep him engaged, and B, give him the right environment where he can develop as a player if he's not in your first team?
Yeah,
you're 19.
Right. Well, under 20s, and Gary will probably tell you, I thought it was a great concept, especially when you've got four or five first teamers in there, because lads really looked up to playing them against them four or five first teamers. And you got some quite decent competition. Matt can remember it, can't you, Matt, when we were there? So we had a real good look at this, because we needed it to happen for us. And last year we dual registered with Oxford, and that were quite good for us, because we got Will May, Tom Holmes, and Kieran Gill, who all advanced through playing with Oxford. So for us it worked. Yeah, there were travelling involved, but it wasn't necessarily who they played with, it were who they were playing against. So they were playing some tough teams, tougher than probably what they expected. And they all, back end of year, they were queuing up. Everybody wanted to sign him. Can we get him at our club? And then we did a great dual reg with Batley, with Paul Harrison over at Batley, who were fantastic for us under John Kerr. I thought he developed the likes of Greg Minikin. You know, he gave him that extra that we needed. And then when Greg dropped back into first grade, he's just been immovable. And to me, he's been one of the finds that season for us.
Possible young player of the year, I'd say.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. And he's been absolutely fantastic for us. Another English centre that's come on. He's learnt a lot of Jake. Shenny's been on the mountain of work with him as well. But they keep saying he's like a young Michael Shenton to look at. But he's advanced no end as Greg since he's been here. And Tom has as well. Who can forget his try over at Wakefield when he skipped round full back and went in. That was his last game for us. And he's another exciting English halfback coming through. Just not quite ready yet, but ready for Championship.
But these young kids want to wear the Castleford shirt. I mean, it's great that you can send them to Batley and know that the environment's right. Oxford, I think there's an issue about developing the sport at the moment, which we'll probably discuss later about Hemel's decision to move to Dewsbury and where we actually are, you know, in terms of the national footprint anymore, which was the supposed aim 2 or 3 years ago. But are these young kids happy wearing a shirt that's other than a Castleford shirt the ethos of Castleford?
Well, I think if we sent them in, we didn't have anything to do with them for the rest of the season, I would probably say no. But because they are within the environment, Darryl does the reviews with them, he sits with them, it is a game to get to where they need to be. I mean, everybody wants to play first team. Not everybody will, but what you've got is the back in training Monday morning with us, the back in rehab Monday morning with us, the train all through a week with us, and then they have a running session with the dual reg club. And you know what? It was quite interesting. When Greg Minikin were there, when Castleford did have a game and he played on Thursday or Friday for Cass, he went and watched Batley. He travelled over and he watched them and supported his lads who were away, and I thought that was fantastic for the lad. And he bought into their ethos as well. So he could see from both sides what a privilege it was to play for Castleford full time, but also what a lot of these guys who were working in week come and put into training. And I think that was a valuable experience for Greg.
I'll tell you what, to Minikin as well, what I've seen of him, is we're not blessed with quality centres, Steve. I'll tell you what, he won't look out of place in England shirt, I'll tell you. He wouldn't. I don't think he'd look out of place in England jersey.
Oh, don't tell his agent that, Craig Harris.
I think he's on holiday.
I think what I've seen of him, because the kid's got pace, he's got a nice pair of hands as well, and I tell you, he wouldn't look out of place in England jersey.
Darryl did well with that. He pushed and pushed for him, and James Ford also giving some massive raps to people I speak to. John Keir absolutely loves him. He'd have probably took him to Wakefield this year if we could have loaned him out and things like that.
Because when you played at Hull about 3 or 4 weeks ago, he was outstanding. He was outstanding, wasn't he? You know, you look at, well, they call it footwork nowadays, but he's sidestepping this sort of thing, and certainly the passes what he gave out. Sensational, honestly. He wouldn't look out of place.
He's a quality kid. He's coming through. He's young. You know, he's one we need to keep.
Good stuff. Can we go through some tweets? Because I keep asking for them and I haven't read any out yet, so I feel a little bit rude. At RL on RY, Andy says, keep hearing about point scaling in the Super 8s. This year, Hull went in first with 34. Wakefield in 8th had 20, a 14-point gap. Is it fair to reduce the 14-point gap between 1st and 8th to, say, 8 points? Surely not fair for the top clubs who have done well. I had a thought the other day that if you're top, you get 8. If you're bottom, you get 1. But what it means is the gap from 8th to 4th, what would it be? 4 points? 5 points?
Yeah, well,
it's gettable, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because we went to Hull in our first game and beat them.
Hmm.
So all of a sudden, then us starting on what on 3 points, we'd have been up to 5, and Hull had only been 3 points ahead. But we've got to make that Super 8s more exciting, I believe. And it sounded good when we first did it. I mean, the guy is probably from Hull. Hull started on one last year, and they. Realistically, then last year, all didn't have a chance of getting to where they needed to be. So now, what they'd all have been, all have been up there and having a good go up, getting where they needed to be. We probably need to relook at that, Mark. We've looked at it and we just think we need to make that Super 8 more challenging. All's gone pretty well this year. They had many injuries last year. They did, and they've gone pretty well, and it's shown what they can do. Wakefield and ourselves. And teams around us, they've had some massive injuries, and it gives you the chance, if you get them injuries back for that type of season, you can have a real good go. And let's get a fresh face good at grand final rather than the same four all the time.
Fair enough. Luke has asked a question, Steve. He said, is there a club in Super League that you look up to and see as a possible blueprint for Castleford to follow?
Yeah, it's always been Leeds Rhinos for me and St Helens. It's the... There's things I like about Wigan. I like Sean Wayne's passion, and he gets a lot of stick, but you've cut him through and through, and you've got Daddle Powell, same with Castleford Tigers. No matter, you don't want to talk about anybody else, you just want to talk about Castleford Tigers. I like the way the Leeds have done, how Gary's done that. This year what they've done at Leeds Rhinos is they've had a lot of flack, and as a club they'll come back stronger for that, because they've learnt through adversity they've never had before. And they've toughed it out. They've stayed loyal to everybody, and I think they'll be a massive force next year. And St Helens is a type of football everybody wants to play. So they're the three teams that I always look at, and what they play at Saints. We haven't been there and beat them yet. And they're all, for some reason, when they turn it on, they're just magic. We talked about football and how attractive Cass are, but Saints on the day, they can be. They're just mesmerising at times, and I don't know if anybody saw the Featherstone Rovers try yesterday. The first
one,
yeah,
it's
going on. Yeah,
it's the best try. It's the best I've seen in the Super 8 so far this year.
It is. So, but yeah, I mean, they're the type of things that you pick from each one, and you want to look at them and pull in. And I don't think we're far off that at the moment, Tam. But you can't stop still. We want to be betting them. Mm. And hopefully when we get up to the new stadium we will be, but I think what we've got at Cass is unique, and they can't match that, and nobody wants to come to Jungle and play Cass. Everybody thinks, oh god, we make it as uncomfortable as we can for them. Fans are behind them, and for the 80 minutes they just turn on them, and we give them as much stick as we can, and it's a great pitch to play on. And obviously Stuart Boss keeps it absolutely fantastic, and it's one of the best fields in Super League. Yeah. But it's just what we are. It's in our DNA. It's, we're Cass, we're proud, but their clubs I kind of emulate, and I want to take, and I want to be there with them.
Good stuff. Go to the Jungle. It's like our show with Scoy. We try and give him as much stick as we can and make it as uncomfortable as we can for him. Mike says, evening, gents. Thank you for the free tickets to the Hull game. We won them last week, one of the competitions. Well done, Mike. How did Scoy's refereeing game go? Shocking.
It was brilliant, honestly. Excellent. I was pretty happy. I was pretty happy the way that I kept up with it, to be honest with you, because I was hospitality at Leeds on Friday night. I had a couple of quiet ones, to be honest with you, and I had to run it off to get some more in Saturday afternoon. But it was very enjoyable, and as I say,
good stuff.
The amount of people who turned up was excellent.
Excellent. And I've tweeted out the link as well, so
great,
everyone's
thanks
got
very
that.
Much. Great.
Andy feels Huddersfield are more likely to face the drop. They've got the hardest fixtures left and a shot, in my opinion. Sam, he's going for Huddersfield as well. well because they've got the fixtures. Tony, he thinks Salford are going to go down. Bilko says, I hope it's between Hull County and Huddersfield because they both, well, they both got rid of their coaches and arguably replaced Pawley. Interesting one. Wayne has gone for Huddersfield as well. In regards to the TV, Tyler, who's a big Cast fan, says no matter what they do or what the schedule is, someone will moan about it and think they know better. That's rugby league for you.
We do know better, don't we?
Mick asked the question, what time? When would you have it? It's got to be an evening, hasn't it? It's got to be when everyone gets home, they can watch the match, have a couple of beers, whatever.
Without wanting to go back to it again, the original Wakefield Castlewood non-million pound game wasn't it? It was a Saturday evening.
Drama under lights. That's what we want.
Brian says, Hull KR should win now, unless the Giants shock Leeds next week, as in Hull KR should finish third. Reds v Giants in the £1 million game. But where? Because we told Salford on the day of the £1 million game can't play at home because it's not their ground and they're not allowed to play at home. So, there you go. Interesting one.
I think the good doctor has said they'd probably play at Lee.
Lee
or Warrington, he said.
How much of these fixture problems and rearranging is down to clubs that don't have their own ground? As in, we all know Huddersfield, Wigan, they've got football stadiums, they are the lesser tenants, same with Salford. Is that part of the problem? Because it seems to me you get stick for having your own ground, you and Michael, and it's not this and it's not that. But it is your own, you can play on it when you want.
I wouldn't like to do all the fixtures at the beginning of the year, because everybody wants an old fixture to start with, and obviously football still takes a preference early on in season, so I'd hate to do that, you know. And so you know, we're quite lucky that we've got our own ground, and everything that we get in there we generate is for us, so that's that. They've got the big grounds, we like to see our packed, and I also, we're playing front of faces, not spaces, and some of these football grounds are miles too big for the team they've got in there, and it don't create an atmosphere. You've probably done that yourself. And you know, cast ground with 6,000 or 7,000 in it, it can sound like 20,000 on a good game. So when we do get it back, like the Leeds Rhinos game when we sold out for the last two year, they're phenomenal games, especially when if we nick the points.
Good stuff. Yeah, good stuff. Stephen, I want to say a big thank you to Gary for a signed picture. Is that for the dartboard, Stephen, or what have you got that for?
Didn't say it was a signed picture of Gary.
Top man and a great rugby league player. You've been sending pictures out again in the post.
And a fiver. And a fiver in a brown envelope.
The man now known, of course, as ex-international rugby league player.
Yes, they won't talk about it on the telly. You've been criticising again, haven't you?
Listen, I was only honest about in my column last week in the League Express by saying, if it's a Wigan and St Helens Grand Final, it'll be a boring fest. You know, and they say, you know, the people on Sky, they don't even give me the respect. One thing what I will not accept. Okay, people don't like me. For whatever reason, that's their choice. But I am allowed an opinion on what I see. And what I said last week in McCollum, it's Wigan and St Helens, it'll be a boring grand final. But them two on Sky, and I'll mention them, Eddie Emmons and Mike Stevenson, didn't give me the respect they deserved by. And all they said was, an ex-international said, if St Helens gets to the grand final, it'll be a travesty. Well, don't be ashamed. Name me. That's what I said, and that's what I believe in, because I'm entitled to an opinion. Let me just say this as well about them on Sky. Just because you have an opinion, you're not always right, but they think they are. They think whatever they say on television, they are right, and they're not, they'd obviously get criticism. But one thing for sure as well, when you watch that game against St Helens and Castleford the other night, Brian Carney and Phil Clark were questioning the style of the way Wigan and St Helens are playing, so I rest my case.
Well, we'll get them back on message because we're going to be late for the news now. Well, we'll talk more rugby league after the news at 7. While you listen to these adverts as we go there, we're going to discuss the players who really are stealing a living, who aren't Randy Chase.
Proper sport at 6. Rugby league on Radio Yorkshire with Richard Shawright.
BBC losing the Bake Off. What? They've lost the contract for the Bake. You remember in the old days we used to joke about them losing the golf and the cricket and the snooker.
Well, where's it going?
Well, one assumes the ITV, unless TV Yorkshire puts in a bid. Proper Bake Off.
Yeah, let's have more cake. That's what this. That's what this programme lacks. Cake.
Well, like Test Match Special. We need more cake. If you want to send in some cakes to the studio.
Always appreciated.
Please do so. It's Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. And that might be an idea for the after the end of the Rugby League season.
Yeah, well, can I just say, anyone that sends any cake in for Scully, I do not want any of it, because I'd dread to think what might be in it. So will he test it all? For, if he does, then I'll have some.
There was a story of someone on another radio station used to do a phone-in overnight. They sent in some donuts laced with drugs.
Wow.
And he ate them. He didn't know, obviously. went to rally on the air. So don't send those. Scully's bonkers enough as it is.
He is. Donuts.
Twitter.
Yes.
We've got another question for Steve.
Yeah, Luke wants to know, when are we going to hear about some new signings and re-signings for the Tigers?
Ah, well.
That you're allowed to tell us.
Yes, yeah.
You don't,
get Michelle on the phone. Get Michelle on the phone.
Well, look, I've already had to tell it off tonight.
I've just had Craig Harrison on Scully. Scully, keep plugging my players. Keep plugging my players.
And all will be announced in due course.
Very good. But you're confident. You said earlier you're going to be challenging. So you're confident there's some good news for the guys to get hold of?
Yeah, I think if you look at nucleus of a squad and, you know, the additions, because obviously we've announced Greg Eden already. And also we signed Lyme Patrick as well, we've announced him. So people forget, because them two's been announced pretty early, and Lyme's been with us since April. You know, they forget he's technically a new signing that'll start with us next year again. So I'm convinced. I think with squad we've got next year, barring injuries again that we've had this year, that we can really, there's a trophy winning side there.
Steve also as well, how worried are you? Maybe Some clubs maybe don't doing so well. How worried could be about maybe losing Dal? But I think Dal's very, very committed to Cass, and I think Dal will stay there forever if you want him, won't he?
Yeah, I think eventually he'll become a chief exec, and then he'll probably come on to be a life president and things like that. So, look, me and Dal's got a great relationship. And he's got a great relationship with Ian Fulton as well.
He's got a great relationship with the fans as well, hasn't he? Every time when he comes out at the warm-up, and they all applaud him when he comes out before the game. He's got a great rapport with the fans, hasn't he?
Yeah, you know, and he knows, and he's got something, he wants to win something.
Yes.
And, you know, he's built this team over 3 years, and in real terms, that's not a long time to start putting teams together that's been together and played together long times, and you lose little bits of that as season goes on, but you hope to strengthen or bring in the players that you want. And you know, when we first got together, me and Dad, we had a plan to get to where we needed to be, and you know, he does his talking upfield, we do our, you know, and obviously I've got my backroom team, Mark Grattan and people like that who have been massive for us. People don't really know him. And it's a plan that we got to get from where we were at that stage to get to where we are now. And 3 years not a long time. So we've got his eye really on next year and beyond. That we know it'll take us a while to build a good side. And fingers crossed.
So I'm taking it from that, because I had two goals at coaching. Not very long ones. But the reason being, I had interference me from directors. I'm getting it here that you do your side and you let Dal do the coaching. Would that be right?
Yeah,
and that's how it should be, shouldn't it?
Dal knows that if it's tough, I'm there. There has been times when I ring him every game. If we win, I don't bother. I just text him, thank you. I ring him every game. Are you all right? Is everybody all right? Players, and staff, you know, because it is.
Well, that's what you should do. Really.
It is important.
Yeah.
I believe that you need somebody to support you.
I'm talking about from an interference point of view, where somebody wants to be in the dressing room, somebody wants to say on this, somebody wants to say that.
You know Dad.
Yeah, this is why. Well, I got the sack at Huddersfield because I told the sports psychologist to get lost. That Paul Morgan, who was at Huddersfield, and obviously Des Johnson, you know all about Desert Barrow, but what I'm saying is here, you don't have any.
I believe in Dad. I've had good faith in Dad. I believe in his ability. And the dressing room is not my area, before or after the game. That's their area. It needs to be kept clean. No interferences and no question of his authority, and he never gets that. We have some great debates.
So absolutely, we bounce it. Absolutely.
Fortunately, we do agree on a lot of things. And
how important Shez and Danny are then? Because
very.
They've got a big part to play as well, haven't they?
Very. The you know.
Because they've got a great friendship as well, haven't they? Daryl shares and Danny, they've got a great friendship as well.
There's Matty Crowther as well, who's his
physio,
and,
yeah.
And then there's Ben Cooper
as well. Still looks as though he could play, doesn't he, Crowther, the way he gets on that field.
And Coops does as well, Ben Cooper, you know, strength and conditioner, and the rugby league men, they've all had an association in some way, shape or form with club. And Daryl believes in them impeccably, and they're a good squad, they're good men as well, which is even, I know when we lose and fans get upset, they're just as upset, and it hurts them as well, and it has to do that for me. It ain't just a job for them, it is passion as well. So whatever the show, that, you know, long may continue.
You mentioned the acquisition of Greg Eden, that's to replace Luke Dawn. How are you going to A, commemorate his leaving, and B, has he been the best overseas signing that Super League has ever seen?
I think for Castleford, I mean, we've had some great overseas signings.
I mean, across the whole game.
I think where he plays, he's exciting. He's looking to, and we tried to keep him. He's made his mind up that he wanted to leave, and probably right. Brave, because you know he has an history of hamstring tears, and he knows he was out 12 weeks this year, and Luke didn't want that to happen to him again, where he was out a long period of time, I know his wife, she's got a good job to go back to, and he's going back to where he first started his rugby league. And he knows he can leave in a hero's retreat when he goes. There'll be a lot of tears down at Jungle on that last game against Widnes, and they're going to have a leaving do for him. We're going to celebrate what he's done, not only at Castleford Tigers but in rugby league in general. He's actually selling his car at the moment in time, so if anybody wants to buy it, they've got to contact me. He's got a BMW. He's telling me if anybody wants it, Steve, before I go, let him know. Reasonably priced. I'm getting like Morgan advertising his house or thingy now, but Luke's been great for us. Anything he's asked, and he's a great speaker. He's a great ambassador for club and rugby league. And when he talks, everybody listens. So yeah, Super League will miss him. Mm-hmm. He saw some absolutely awesome tries in since I've watched him. And wherever he's been, he's always given 100%.
I think we'll all miss him.
Yeah,
I think he's been one of the absolute entertainers. And the amazing thing is that he's almost got cult status at certainly two of the three clubs he's played at, and they're not clubs that have been winning things.
No.
So that must be a measure of the man.
Yeah. I think it's his ability to turn a nothing into a try. I mean, we even at weekend on Thursday when he scored against Saints, he opened them up, and he's got that ability. You know, one minute you're seeing him leaning up post, you know, watching game and as unconcerned anything. Next minute he's gone 30 yards and scored. You know.
How proud are you that you've been able to tie Luke Gale down to a long-term contract? Because there's been, in the not-too-distant past, the best players have had to go to balance the books, and that obviously is not the case anymore. You must be delighted with that.
Gale is Gale, isn't he? I mean, you probably all...
So you can just let me shave that beard off?
No.
Shave his hair off? Because we're worse hairstyle than Matt Wilson.
What have you been like that for?
I'll be honest.
Gale's been fantastic for us. He's learning a lot as well off Daryl and Danny and Shares, which is he's calming down. Being, I think he mentioned the other day that having looked on at the back of him has helped him as well, because you know he's calling shots. But Gale has been fantastic, and if he's not in England squad this time,
I was just going to say that to you, Steve, because last year it was very disappointing not even to get a start in any of the three games, and the way he's played this year, obviously he's got the Albert Goldthorpe medal. Maybe in the running for the Man of Steel. Does Gailey talk to Dell about it, or does he say to you, boy, I want to get in this England, I need to get in this England team, just to test myself?
You'd love to. I mean, one of questions is when we first looked at signing him, he wanted to try himself in Australia. Yeah, there were a couple of options for him to go to Australia, but he wanted to be remembered somewhere, you know, not a journeyman. He wanted to be remembered. He wanted to put his boots down somewhere and his roots and say, you know, I want to be an Alan Hardesty, a Keith Epworth at Castleford Tigers. I want to be renowned as a legend and achieve something at Castleford Tigers. And I think there's not many players want to do that anymore. But Daryl's building this culture within club that, you know, they're leaving a legacy. Let's leave a legacy. It's our time, is this? Let's leave a legacy at this club. And then when we move on and when we've done, it's for somebody else to do, but let's look to surpass what we've done. But Gale is great. He's funny. You know, he's got time for everybody around club. He's always smiling. He's a typical cheeky scrum half, but he's got time for everybody.
And to tie him down in English scrum half as well, for that long period, well, probably see his time out of gas. That's fantastic.
He hasn't got as much credit as he deserves for Denis Solomona's tries this season either, who is one of the most entertaining and exciting finishers in the game. One of the great rules has been to take the corner flag out, but you've got to give the guy ammunition as well. And
yeah, that left edge of ours has been superb. We were talking today about, you know, our right edge. If John Monahan had had that same, because obviously we lost a lot of us on that side. But when we talk Chase, Moores or McMeekin, with Webster and Monahan on that right side, you know, they look at the experience and everything on that. Then you go to the other side when you've got Gale, you've got Oliver Holmes, you've got Shenton and Solomona. You know, I think we could play at wing with them insiders, don't we, really?
I think just Luke's ability to read and set up play has added a whole new dimension in the last couple of years.
It has.
Yes, you need the finishers out there, and they do some spectacular things, but you can have the best winger in the world if you don't give him the ball. He's not the best winger in the world.
And, you know, we haven't even mentioned Benny Roberts, so we're on fire back end of last year and started the season really well. And so, you know, with that mixture there on if we've got Benny there, because defensively Benny's superb, but also his running game's superb as well. So I just look at our back line for next year, and I, you know, for the first time now I'm going, wow, you know.
And we haven't even mentioned Greg Minikin.
And we haven't mentioned Greg Minikin, have we? We've mentioned, you know, we've got Shenny back, he's like a new player for us next year. We'll be able to rest Jake a bit more, because Jake's had to play a lot of games this year. So we'll be able to wait. And Jack Webster, when he plays, he's had a great season for us.
I mean, we've been talking about the dream team, because the nominations are out amongst some of the journalists, and one of the stipulations is you've got to pick players that have played in a predominant position, which means that you can't pick somebody like Grant Millington, because he's actually been covering at standoff. I mean, again, doesn't get the credit he deserves, but what would you have done this year without a Grant Millington who is a prop forward, or is standoff in a prop forward's body?
Yeah.
Gary hates it, forwards playing at half back, but he's been brilliant.
Oh, it's been sensational.
Have you noticed he never kicks the ball, though? Grant's a rugby league player, first and foremost, and I think if you're a rugby league player and your knowledge at game is as advanced as Grant, you could probably play anywhere and you can do a job. McShane's been great for us when he's gone into halves as well. So, you know, if good rugby league players will always come to the fore, whether they play full-back, half-back, front row, you know, you've got this ability in your mind to play them. Grant actually played stand-off as a junior, so it kind of slotted him for him. And I would hate to think I'll play against him, you know, if he were opposite half-back.
And how is he? Because obviously he went off and there was a concern about a heart murmur. Is he all right?
Yeah, Grant's very technical when he explains it. He knows every little detail. So he's got to have a slight operation. It's apparently the coming throat thigh, and it comes up and it's taking a little bit of skin off that's flapping and stopping this porthole, so to speak, blood flowing through, which is a very, it's not that common, but it's common enough, and you know, we want him to get it done. I think at a push he could have played last three games, but you know, you couldn't live with yourself if anything happened to him, so we're going to get that done and get him rested up, and then we can get him back in for pre-season.
Very good, very good. Let's have a look elsewhere.
I want to talk about the qualifiers.
Go on then.
I mean, it's great for Stephen, because he doesn't have to worry about this problem. And Wakefield this year don't have to worry about this problem. But for the chief execs of Hawkinson Rovers, Huddersfield Giants, Salford Red Devils, they have to potentially prepare for life in the Championship.
Well, Huddersfield have got three cup finals now, haven't they, basically? They've got Leeds this week, they've got Hull KR, and potentially the £1 million game. Scully, are they not be worried now?
Oh, we've arrowed out, and I say that, but the big problem is the coach doesn't know his best team. Doesn't know his formula, as he calls it. They've no composure, as he says there, and, you know, he's leaving one of his best players out in Briley, you know. So I wonder what the dressing room's like there at Huddersfield, you know, because I think they made a big mistake by appointing him. I think they should have given it to Andy Kelly. And as we said before, he went to Australia for 3 weeks, but they should have given it to Chris Foreman to take charge while he was away. And then they still would have that togetherness when Kelly came back. And, you know, when you've, You've got an Australian coach again saying he needs a bit of time. Well, unfortunately, he hasn't got time. He hasn't got time. He's got two games and then two games to maybe not getting a £1 million game. But if he's in that £1 million game, then boy, oh boy, it's the pressure on. And for the last 3 years, I've been saying about Huddersfield, can they handle big games? Can they handle pressure? Have they bottled it? I'll tell you what, all three of them have been right. They can't play in big games, they can't handle pressure, and they bottle it. Simple as that. Now, so the next three games, and I tell you what, when you look at their chairman, Ken Davey, you know, Steve, you know Ken very well. You know, what a great man Ken Davey is, and like I say, he does his utmost best to get as many people through the turnstiles, and, you know, okay, the players got what they wanted, they got what they wanted when they sacked Paul Anderson, you know, the players who got in the sack there, but whether that were right or wrong, at this moment in time, I'd say, it was a bad call by Huddersfield to sack Anderson.
Ken reminds me a lot, you know, of Jack Fulton. A gentleman who...
Great bloke,
absolutely fantastic. And I also remember the beaters down lane a couple of years back, and he called back and he shook me hand, and you know what he's like, very polite.
Yeah.
And he went down a few steps in hospitality, he come back up and he says, Steve, he says, you know what, he says, I wish I could take what you've got here to fire time. Yeah. So I just feel, I said, what's that, Ken? He says, this atmosphere, yeah, I've never known anything like it. He said, just loves it at gas. And he's so gentlemanly, and you just... I feel for him, because I think Huddersfield, he's done a lot for Huddersfield. I can remember the coach before Paul, the Australian coach,
Nathan Brown.
You know, he says, I dare ask him for a bottle of water, because I know what money he's burnt at this club, you know, and put in. And so their appreciation there of what he does. And, you know, I hope for him that they do stay up.
I think they look the most vulnerable at the moment. I mean, for a coach that prides himself on defence... And it's not in any way to detract from the first 40 minutes from Lee that was probably the best we've seen for 2-3 years, just attacking brilliance, orchestrated by people like Paul Cook, who they brought on the staff. But for a Super League club and coach that says, I'm there to improve the defence, to concede 42 points in 40 minutes. But I think the body language in the second half looked pretty odd as well for Huddersfield, because they could have won it even in the last 6 or 7 minutes. They were 8 points behind. It wasn't beyond the realms of possibility, but they looked like a bunch of individuals. They didn't seem to have a team structure. They were giving the ball to certain players and saying, can you fashion something?
I thought they got back into it, Phil, and I thought the game changer for me was probably a 12-point turnaround when Jamie Ellis dropped the ball. I mean, Jamie takes them 99 times out of 100 and scores, and then they come straight back down to the other end of the field and score, and then their just heads seemed to drop. And then they started to play a bit, obviously, that last 15 minutes, and there was just that chance, that opportunity that they just might nick it, but then that 2 points were just, I don't know. I'd have been nervous as a Leaf fan, definitely, but it just time were running out, wasn't it? And there was enough experience, I thought, in that Leaf side just to slow it down as it needed.
I'm just not sure there was the belief in the Huddersfield team that they genuinely could do it. It was almost like, if we can ship the ball wide, possibly we might make a break. But there was too much one-out stuff, even when they had a chance of winning it.
Do you think the Kieran Pertell factor of being at Leaf... Well, I mean, you know, when we go to Huddersfield, we attack their right edge.
Mm-hmm.
Wakefield did it. They attacked their right edge.
I
just don't think they're a team, Huddersfield. They're not a team, they're not. And I say that young kid, Briley, what has he done to deserve the treatment what he's getting? I find it absolutely disgusting. I do, I find it disgusting. A young British kid, British talent like
of
that.
Of all the games you would have played him, you'd have thought the one at Lee might have been one that you'd want to. He'd had every added incentive having moved on from Lee, unless he thought it was the coach thought it was going to be too emotional for him. But I would have thought that's exactly the kind of environment he would have thrived in.
If you know Ryan like I, he'd have camped out overnight and just to play in that game at full back. Or
and isn't that what you want when you're in a relegation situation? I mean, we can compare it to Hull KR and look at, you know, Jamie Peacock's decision to come back. It's players that will stand up in those games. They're going to make the difference between promotion and relegation. And I don't know. I mean, we do know that one or two of those Huddersfield players are moving on at the end of the year. Some like Jake Connor have already been announced, so it's no secret. You just wonder if there is that degree of unity that you need to get yourself out of this kind of a situation.
But do you know what? This weekend's game against Leeds, they could win that, because it all depends on Leeds' attitude, doesn't it? You know, Leeds have survived now, so if Leeds... I guess their focus has been since this qualifying next came, do we go out and try win 7 from 7? So it all depends on Leeds' attitude. If Leeds get the good attitude on Sunday, then they beat the Giants because they're no team.
Leeds will take the handbrake off. I think they've deliberately played conservatively in the games to get to the fact that they know they're in Super League next year. They've almost been self-inhibited. They've stopped the offload. They've ground teams down where they have to. They did it against Battle. They did everything they needed to do to win that game. It wasn't about...
I'll tell you what, I'm doing the game on Sunday. I hope I don't see Leeds' performance like that again.
No, I think the fact that they have now achieved their goal and they know they're in Super League, that you would think Brian McDermott might be saying, let's have a bit of fun now.
Mm.
And if they do, and it comes off, that'll be difficult for Huddersfield.
Very difficult for the Giants.
Yeah.
It is. Mm. How do you see, Mike?
I think they're in trouble. And I said, before a ball was kicked in the eights, I said I thought Lee would go up, and I thought it'd be Huddersfield and Hull KR in the £1 million game. Got to revise that now because I think Salford are in a bit of trouble. But it could come down to points difference. And
the points here.
Does it help that Salford have got the two championship teams to play and could go to the last game knowing pretty much how many points they might need to score? It's one of them, isn't it? It's like the old final day of the football season when someone's going to get relegated or whatever and you're waiting for the goal to go in. That's what it's going to be like. The difference between being in that top three and being in that £1 million game is, it's frightening, isn't it? It's frightening.
Are all the final fixtures, all the ones that matter, being played at the same time?
I don't know.
KR Huddersfield is definitely on the Sunday because we're doing it, but I don't know. Until
Sky decide which game they're showing for week seven, we'll just
get Scully in for 4 hours again, and we'll go through his career again.
I'll tell you what, as well. I'm looking at this here. Hawkinson Rovers. If Campese stays fit, Hawkinson Rovers stay in Super League. Simple as that.
According to all the reports I read this morning, all the headlines were not about. Terry Campese, nothing to do with him. It's all about Jamie Peacock. So well done, the headline writers there.
Well, I'm telling them headline writers now. If Campese stays fit, Hawkinson Rovers stay in Super League. Simple as that.
Well, you think they win at Featherstone on Sunday, obviously. Yep. So that'll increase their points difference.
And then the goal is for the last game of the season.
Do you think Albert Kelly will be back, Gary?
I don't think he'll play for the club again, Steve. No. Okay.
Mmm, interesting. I've put the Hornets' nest. Because I asked the question, is Luke Dawn the best Super League overseas player ever? At which point I've been abused to high heaven. we'll start by Nathan says, he thought that Cass had a championship, or a silverware winning team this year till they lost a different player every week. That's injuries, can't be helped. Mark says, not even close, Luke Dawn. What about Lauatiti, Webb, Richards, Lyon, Albert, Vinacola, Happy? He said that's 7 straight away, fair enough. Tyler asked people to pick one player from their team and one from another team to go into a potential dream team. Solomon from my team, Bateman from Wigan, says Cass.
Too much of the season, Bateman.
Up until he got banned, he would have been in running for Man of Steel, I would have said Bateman. But the ban obviously makes life hard. Stevens on for Luke Gale from Cast, Danny Houghton from Hull. Mark says not one Leeds player deserves to be in the dream team in his opinion. I'm not sure one will get in, to be honest.
I don't think
Phil said Jamie Lyon's been the best overseas recruit. Chris says Ali Lauatiti. Con says Jamie Lyon for quality, Luluai for longevity. Dawn's been around a while. Lucas then, because he laughed when I said Luke Dawn, he's come back and said Lyon, Happy, Vanacola, Lauatiti, Luluai, Richards, Webb, Dallas, Renoff, Langer, the Monaghan brothers. Pad said lots of great servants, and but he said what has he achieved in terms of silverware? Not a lot. Let's have a look. Mark says, oh, great servant to British Rugby League, even looked good even in some poor teams. Fair point. So a lot, again, people have their own opinions. Steve has asked us about Mason Caton Brown signing from Salford to Wakefield.
What about Buffalo?
interesting last week. We actually gave 2 exclusives out, didn't we, by accident?
Oh, did we?
Tim Sheens one we were quite confident on. We had a whisper on that one. And the other one was Mason Caton Brown, which I apologise.
It'd been in the papers 2 or 3 weeks.
I thought it had. But Steve's happy. Are you happy with him? He knows where the try line is, doesn't he?
Another pacey player. Well, if you're going to have a very fast three quarters, just hopefully the forwards next year provide the platform for them to use that pace. We shall see. Mm. It's going to be an interesting year in 2017. I just want to ask Steve about the format for the Super 8. Obviously, Castlewood haven't had to worry in the past two seasons about being in the qualifiers, but it must place a lot of stress, not just on the players and the coaching staff, but on the backroom staff as well, because one assumes that some clubs, if they get relegated, a lot of people are going to be made redundant.
Yeah, yeah, it's something we haven't crossed yet, but and hopefully we don't never have to. I've often thought about it. The time before the Catalans game, I did say to Daddle, we had a little meeting in his office, and I said, do we need to start preparing just in case? Because the injuries were just mounting up, and, you know, we've got Catalans at home, and I thought for it was something like that, some real tough fixes. And he just looked at me and he says, no, we'll get a win this weekend. And the rest of the history. And having that type of confidence in your coach, it's for a CEO and fans as well, is unbelievable. It's you know, he believes in what he does, he knows his team, he knows his players inside out, he knows what he has to do. It ain't just a case of turning up. We're fortunate that I see him training every day on main field and that from our office, and you know the work that goes in and how the play and the type of player that he needs to do that specific job. And they've a massive respect for Daddle of players. A lot of players, you know, want to come to Cast now because of Daddle. Salary cap should be about 3 million now then for players that want to come in, that we could get him in. But it's we're in a fortunate situation where we've not been there. My heart goes out to all players that, you know, that have to move or CEOs that have to budget for Championship rugby next year, because, you know, travelling to some of these smaller places that don't crowds and that, and knowing that you're not going to get the Leeds, the Wakefields, the who do fetch a lot of fans, the Castleford's, the old sides, it is going to be tough. We've been there in 2005 and 2006 when we got relegated, and it is a tough place, but you've got to stick at it and hopefully come through the other end.
You must have a good relationship with the other teams, because how important was it to get someone like Andre Savelio when you just needed a big forward, and nobody had seen that coming, that Saints would release him, but also that he would come to you and be pleased to be with you?
Yeah, I have a good relationship with Mike Rush, because Mike did the same job at St Helens for as many years as I did it at Cass. And, you know, but Andre wanted to come to play for Daddle.
Mm-hmm.
He got other options and he wanted to come, and there were a bit of movement there, because obviously we had to make it Danny Tickle. We weren't in a position to offer him a contract for 2017, so Lee had actually offered him a contract for if we could take him now. So it would have balancing act, because Danny had come out of what he'd been through, and he asked to go, but he would have stayed loyal to Cass. So we were on a couple of days chancing to get Andre in, and while I said, look, give me a couple of days and we'll see if we can sort it out, and he got other people knocking on the door for Andre to go to them. And to be fair, Rushy just kept his cool. He said, no, Cass have got first option, and as soon as they say yes or no, then it'll happen. And we made it happen, and then he's been great for us as Andre. Mm.
Which again just shows the respect people have in the game for Daryl and wanting to play at Cass.
Yeah, I think he's what they call it, Daryl, he's well respected. If you cross him, then it's another kettle of fish. But you know, he's a very proud Castleford lad, and you know, we look forward to having him for many years.
Steve, who do you think's going to win Super League?
Right, I honestly think that St Helens will come through and win Super League.
Mm. Where will they finish? Will they get a home semi-final?
I don't think it matters.
Because they could quite easily, because the others above them have got to play each other, and that's why they're such a danger.
I don't think it does. I think now they've made the top four, they could still get finished second.
Mm.
And I think that Saints are starting to now just click into gear. I watched a great game at weekend, the Hull and Wigan game. I thought Tau Tai's to the tackle and the try scored were outstanding. So we could have it's always a nightmare, really, and are we going to the Saints?
Would you not go if that was the final? Would you stay at home? You know, if we offer you commentary work?
We won't be doing it, will we?
Oh, we'll do whatever we want.
He'd be taking the ball out, won't he?
We could. So when I get invited, don't I? You're from the RFL. Part of the Hall of Fame.
I think Saints and all will be a perfect final for me this year. I do, honestly. Saints and all would be a great final. I think Saints and all have been a real form side.
this year, and I'd love to see like people like Sneedy and Geordie Thompson, ex-cast lads, and people, and probably Gareth Ellis bowing out with the grand final. And but I don't think Saints are very dangerous at the moment in time. They've had nothing to play for, and now all of a sudden they're just kicking into gear, and you think, wow. Hmm.
Phil, we need to talk about the Hemel Stags.
No, we don't.
No, we do. We do.
This is an important story time, because Dewsbury is now the hub of rugby league, because they've signed deals with two clubs. A, Super Wakefield Trinity Wildcats, it says on
the hold on, they're only coming up here to train, because they're all Northern-based players. So what do you want to talk about Hemel Stags for?
Hemel Stags?
Hemel aren't Northern-based players, though.
Who are, then?
14... Southern-based Stag.
So they make them come all. They make them come 175 yards. I'm sorry, 175 miles to come and train at them three times a week.
Yeah, are now not going to be playing rugby league because of that decision. But Hemel have been.
Well, who's made it then, and for what reason?
Well, Hemel have been going for 35 years, so this isn't a club. You know, with your link with Oxford is slightly different. They're very new. They've got no community rugby league played around them, so maybe they do need some help. I'm still not 100% certain that it's a great idea to be shipping players across the country. We did that in 1980 with Fulham, and it didn't work. Top-down never works. I think the reason for this is in the statement from Bob Brown. I don't know if you would have come across Bob. He's quite a fiery Aussie. He bought in the greatest lottery ever at Hemel. It kept them going for a number of years. But what he's basically saying is that the League One he signed up for as a development club, bringing local talent through, and you mentioned Mason Caton Brown, he's of that part of the world, the local talent's going to... Cass have, you know, benefited from the likes of Mike McMeekin, Matt Cook, that have started in that part of the world. They joined League One because it was a development league. It was teams of a similar standard who could play against each other and develop and become perhaps feeder clubs of London Broncos, where they were producing more talent they could play. Bob's statement says that in 2015, League One became a performance league with the addition of five former championship clubs. In 2016, Toulouse joined the league, making it even tougher, while the addition of Toronto in 2017 will present further challenges. I think that's at the heart of what we're talking about. What do we want from League One? When Hemel signed up for it and were forced to pay a bond to the RFL, I think they were of the thought that they could build at their pace. And they're not going to be able to, because now they're going to have three Cumbrian teams in there next year, which will take up all of their travel allowance budget, never mind anything else. They're finding it very hard to compete against the traditional clubs in that division, the Hunslets and the Yorks and the Rochdales, that still have ambition perhaps to move up a division. It's very, very difficult in the situation that they're in at the moment to continue as Hemel Stags and be competitive. And I think there is an issue about what do we want from League One, our bottom tier, and Hemel deciding that they should link with Dewsbury. And a number of players who are southern-based players now no longer playing the game, when it's a talent pool that we need to be fishing in and expanding, is a real problem for the sport.
Where are they going to get the players from then?
Hemel.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to share them with Dewsbury.
So Dewsbury players are going to play for Hemel? Is that what we're saying?
So Hemel, in effect, become Dewsbury reserves?
Feeder club.
Mm. But training in Dewsbury. You know, which is disenfranchising.
You know the travesty for me, Phil, and it goes back to these box-ticking exercises that we're very good at rugby league. And when everybody announced these signings and these expansions that we went mad about, the Oxfords, the Gloucesters, the Coventries and things like that, everybody were there with the shirt and ties on, having the photographs took, saying... But what's happened since then?
Exactly.
What has happened financially in support of them? You know, I speak to Adrian Smith at Oxford about the help that they do get, and it's none.
Exactly.
It is nothing. And
it's tokenism, and it's worst kind.
You know, and I just say, well, how do you survive? And they have to run around. Not much better than amateur, really. No, probably some good amateur clubs are better financed than these are. But if we're gonna tick the box, and if we're gonna get the photograph in the League Weekly, the League Express, if we're gonna stand there with his ties and. Just don't do it for photograph. Let's put some substance behind it, and let's give them a chance to recruit, develop,
absolutely,
and get players in from that area that have a pride, not taking lads and you know, I don't mind him dual regime where they're getting odd player who they look up to and think, wow, we're playing with a, you know, he can learn us, but we're taking him from amateur game. I know they want to try it, and I get the old argument that where the lads from amateur want to earn a bit of money and things like that. But what we're doing effectively is taking players out at conference. One of the reasons we didn't go with the reserve grade last year, because I didn't want to top it up with conference players, because that's taking players from Lot Lane, from Castle Panthers, from other clubs that rely on the amateur player to come in and play every week. And if you lose that, you're actually making the conference small, the amateur game. And there's too many amateur clubs at the moment in time folding because of lack of funds and lack of players.
I think it goes back to something even more fundamental than that. If you look at the history of the sport, what's never worked is top-down implementation.
Mm.
So right from the very beginning, we've tried Wales, Streatham and Mitcham. The game is littered, Mansfield, with Kent Invicta, with teams that we've tried to impose on an area. And what we had with what was the Rugby League Conference was 15 years of grassroots building. And that was starting to produce clubs like Coventry Bears, like Bristol Sonics were a very good example of a club that was organically in its area, engaging with schools, moving to summer for those clubs really helped. They were getting a lot of rugby union players in. And slowly but surely, we were developing that national footprint. And at a point in time, the governing body decided we would go away from that model, which is the only one that works grassroots up, and yet again impose some clubs in places like Oxford and Gloucester that usurp the development that had been done. And you look, again, yeah, I know there's some people who are absolutely passionate about the University of Gloucestershire All Girls. Their declared attendance yesterday was 80.
Yeah.
That's the same number of people that SCOE refereed against in a charity game, which is, you know, that's not sustainable.
You can watch an under-9s game and see far more than that.
But what we had was the germination of rugby being played in every county, which was genuine. We now glibly say that it is, and it actually isn't anymore. And we went for a model that was imposing restrictions on people like Hemel and Coventry, that they had to progress at a rate that they couldn't possibly ever match, but they're producing some players for us. There are now Super League players, enough of them in other clubs that have come through the London and South development system to form a London representative team that would actually be pretty good. So to take this out of Hemel and relocate it to Dewsbury just undermines everything that we've been doing over the last few years.
The one thing for me is I mean, I know Phil Jones pretty well, or Phil Jones with Eddie Youth at London, and if you look at the players that come through under Phil Jones, very athletic, very skillful players, still studying how to win games and that, but if you integrate them into squads, they went really well. And I think we've lost that now, that London link that what producing the Mason, Kate and Browns.
And we're going to lose it even
Kieran
more.
Dixons.
Well, Kieran, you know, ironically, is a Hemel Stag,
yeah.
You know, came through the Stag. What we're going to lose is the fact that London Broncos, who now have almost a centre of excellence, bearing in mind that all of their teams train at the same place, they're going to produce more players, and they were starting to feed them out to the Scholars and to Hemel. Well, nobody's going to be fed out to drive all the way up to Dewsbury to train. It's just an absolute nonsense.
And so, it comes back, are we just ticking boxes?
Yes, that's the worry. And we've lost all our development officers, and we'll have less money from Sport England with the next round because our participation numbers will be down. And yet, as a game, we're sanctioning moving a club from the south up to the north.
Michael's been on Twitter at RL on our wise, our resident London fan, as we know. He said, Bob runs Hemel. I mean, it's all the decisions. This is a bad move to go to Dewsbury. On the upside, it'll be more players for Scholars to choose from. There's been issues at Hemel for a while. There's a demonstration last week. Feel sorry for the supporters. George says, where's the incentive for the Southern lads to go up north and get bashed for 100 quid? There should be a south-north split, maybe top four in each league playoff, round-robin, whatever you want to do.
Would Toronto be in the northern group?
Well, and that's the elephant in the room, that not only did we bring in promotion relegation, so championship clubs of note and history and tradition and access to a lot of junior development areas are playing in that division, but Toulouse have just walked through it, and now Toronto. I mean, we quite rightly laud what they've achieved. It's been absolutely tremendous. You looked at Andrew Dixon on Saturday, and he could next year still be playing in Super League with Lee. He's going to be playing in League One with Toronto. That we don't have enough players to allow quality players to be playing in a division they shouldn't be playing in.
At RL and RY, Mark's just trying to work out how to unretweet a tweet, aren't
yeah.
he? Yeah. I did that the other day with something with swearing on our account, but I worked it out eventually.
No, I don't mind.
Just about that. It's alright, so there you go, that's Hemel done. So,
it's very sad. So 35 years of development down the drain. I was texted yesterday by, obviously I used to be involved in the Rugby League Conference, there's a guy called Barry John Swindles who has played for 14 years for Hemel. He's been an absolute stalwart at the club, played in their amateur days, he was a goal kicker for them. He is a bit of a legend in Southern Amateur Rugby League. He has been forced to not play rugby league anymore because he cannot go to Dewsbury three times a week to train. As a sport, it's irresponsible of us, when somebody has invested so much of their life in playing for a club, to just take that away from.
Did we, of course, last week, we were able to, as the media, brackets, go and speak with the new rugby director of the RFL. We couldn't go because we were too busy. You didn't go either, did you, Phil? You didn't go.
We don't do news, we do features.
Well, all I got out of it, according to the one article I read, which was a pointless piece on the National Broadcaster's website, Kevin Sinfield could have gone on and played in the NRL or played for Leeds. Didn't tell me anything about the job he did, but then again, I read the byline of the story, I may as well have stopped there.
Mm.
Well done, sir. Kevin Sinfield, hopefully he has got a job. I mean, we were speculating on the last tackle, perhaps he'll be in the helicopter with the league leader Shield.
Could be.
If he works right. If he works
so
right.
So really,
don't
what
know.
We want, well, what the RFL will want this week is Wigan to beat Warrington. Mm. And then it's game on then, isn't it? Because it's all on all Warrington.
Otherwise.
No, that's if Hull beat Wakefield.
Yeah, I've
have you still got that Wakefield shirt, Scotty?
Yeah,
yeah. Have you got rid of it now?
He's
then?
Playing. No,
I've still got it.
Well, it'd be hard to run round, won't it?
See if Danny Elton can tackle him.
What do you reckon then? Can Wigan do it? I mean, I thought Hull ran out of steam on Friday. I don't know what, I thought they played really well first half. Probably didn't have the points on the board they should have done. And then second half, Wigan just ground them down. And defensively, whatever you say about Wigan as a team, but defensively, they are very, very strong.
They're the Clithorburn of rugby league. They are.
That's a fair point. Yeah.
Lovely analogy.
It'd be nice to see them get a 147, wouldn't it? But
packet of cigarettes in each hand.
Yeah. So, it is what it is, isn't it, in that respect. They are what they are, but can they go to Warrington and win? Because they got hammered there earlier in the year. They had a few out that night, if memory serves me right, Wigan. But they go there, can they get it done?
Yeah, of course they can. And I say there's no love lost between the two coaches, neither is there. You know, between Tony Smith and Whaley himself. Time to know if Tony likes the way Wigan go about their business, but Whaley won't change his philosophy. And they'll want to spoil the presentation. They won't want the presentation on Friday night, and they'll want to make it to go down to the last game. And obviously, Wigan want to, you know, try and maybe finish second. If Hull get beat by Wakefield, which I can't see, and then if Warrington turn them over the week after, then, you know, Wigan want to finish second. So, yeah, it's very possible for Wigan to beat Warrington on Friday.
I think there's another motivation there, Gary, because last year we played our last game at season over at Wigan, and as you know, at director's box, you just sit below and you can see into their director's room, which the Leeds and Huddersfield game were on. So with 30 seconds to go, they're all cheering, and they went from to despair in no time. Oh, it was unbelievable watching just fall on the knees because, you know, League Leaders Shield were on its way to Wigan.
Yeah, yeah.
Then all of a sudden the phone call, helicopter turned round and it flew back to Huddersfield.
I just think, we mentioned it briefly last week, that Warrington's performance at Catalan, for me, is that incentive to get the job done. And to go there with half a team and win it in the last minute was almost like the Ryan Hall try at Huddersfield that night. That infuses you back with the belief that you can do something. I think that they put themselves in a position where they know in front of their own crowd they could deliver a trophy. I think Warrington will do it this week. I genuinely
have they been at Wigan twice this year so far, haven't they? Well, they said a bit.
They hammered them at Warrington.
Yeah, yeah, and they did a good job when they went to the DW, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I still think Wigan's need to score points. Warrington will score points. That is, you know, the way they 800 points they've scored, the only team to get 800 so far. So to beat them, you've got to score a lot of points. I just don't see a lot of points in Wigan.
I think if the triangles here, you know, your Clark, your Sandow, your Gidley, and there was a pullback, the
Rashford, and then you've got Russell as well.
You look at that, and you just think, you know, there's points in that, and obviously what they've got outside as well. Wigan, they grind wins out, but I think Warrington can do that as well. I'd probably go for Warrington this way. I think they're probably a bit more sharper. I thought the win over at Hull last week were down to one man at the end, which to leave it out high nobody had a right to do that, not in that last minute, and then get up and score the try as well. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah, I think Warrington can do them this week, and like they keep saying, it's always their year. Well, they're going to get it right one time. And I hope for Clarkey that they do it. I'd like to see him in the grand final.
He was unbelievable at Wembley, but because of everything that Houghton did, he never got a mention, but his stats were sensational.
They had a nice rest in the second half against Widnes on Friday as well, because the game just completely closed down at half time. Warrington were very good first half, didn't have to do anything in the second half, so maybe that time off. And obviously Darrell Clarke didn't play last week either.
The danger for Wigan then,
Sandow still out, is he still injured, Sandow?
He didn't play on Friday night.
The danger for Wigan, if they lose, is that suddenly St Helens can go above them. So I think they probably will beat Widnes on Sunday, and that, with the points difference already in Saints' favour, that would put them third. So it is a massive game for Wigan. They genuinely cannot afford to lose, but I just think Warrington's firepower and the incentive of a trophy and obviously then a home semi-final, I think it, like you, it just might be their year this year.
Yeah.
And another name on the trophy will be good, as you said at the beginning of the programme.
Yeah, we need to break that monopoly, you know.
We do. Johnny said, ask Steve about signings and when they will be announced, please. I think you've already said there's some coming. Be patient. Keep the faith. Richard wants to know, has Richard got his horrible Oviedo away shirt on today? Not tonight. You've got some shocking
shirts. I'll wear a Highfield shirt next week.
Yeah, fair enough. A lot of interaction tonight about various subjects. What do we think about this £1 million gate? Are they going to move it? They've got to move it, haven't they? They're not going to. Why?
Because
they can't move repeats of old snooker.
And by the way, Chris Sandow's not going to play in the remaining Super 8 games, so he's not going to play until the semi-final. Just says that. He's out for the next two games of Sandow, so that's a big miss. That's a big miss.
It is. Who do you reckon's going to win it, Scoy? Super League?
Do you know what?
You're all about 9 guesses, so I hope we'll close in now.
You know what?
Different from his guess on the last time.
We've been saying it now for the last few weeks, and Steve Gill said it, and the word that said Talons are coming, you just can't rule them out, can you? You can't rule them out, but I just hope it's not Wigan and Saints Grand Final, simple as that. I don't, honestly, I'd be bored to death. But don't rule out St Talons. Just don't rule out Saints.
No. Never.
I think we'd all agree with that, the way they're coming up, wouldn't we? Kieran's very happy. They're going under the radar a little bit. Nobody's speaking about them, and they're going about it nice and quietly.
And the big players are playing.
They're hitting a bit of form, and the players seem to be getting that smile back on their faces. You can't rule out Saints. Simple as that. But, yeah, I'd like to see my club Hull get there. Hull and Warrington, maybe a different name on it, but I'm afraid to say, when it comes to semi-final time, when it comes to pressure of the league, you can't rule Wigan out, so Wigan said Talon's final. Well, boy, oh boy.
Saints are the outsiders.
They're the outsiders, are they?
They are. Warrington the favourites, currently. Then Wigan, Hull, St Helens.
Let's not forget here as well, St Helens, only the great kick from Kevin Sinfield with that 40-20 just beat Saints last year, the game for the grand final. So the experience what St Helens got, the experience what Wigan have, you know, the business end of the season, don't rule out a Wigan St Helens grand final.
What about you, Phil? Where are you going?
I'm going with Warrington. I think, that was the pivotal game at Catalan for them. I think the fixtures mean that Hull have just got a shocking running. We were worried about the hangover from winning the challenge because it meant.
They've got Wakefield this week, though, Phil. No disrespect to Wakefield.
Yeah, but they've got Warrington in the final.
Yeah,
game.
That's what they want, won't they? There's a build up to the semi final. To be honest with you,
what we want is Wigan Saints in the semis, so they can't. It can't be a Wigan Saints grand final. That's what you would.
Yeah, but are we going to finish second, Saints fourth?
Well, Saints have to finish third.
Yeah,
first versus fourth, second versus third.
I don't know.
We will see.
Maybe we all need Wakefield to beat Hull then this week. That's what we all need to happen.
Yeah, but that's not going to that's not going to happen, is it?
Have you been drinking?
It's been a long afternoon. Huh?
That's not going to happen, is it?
Huh? You never know. Every minute matters.
Every second counts.
Yeah,
it does. Very good.
We're coming towards the end of the program. I'm going to make sure I get this time properly, but we've got about 3 minutes left.
We've got predictions then this week?
You can do the predictions if you want. Well, the biggest game of the weekend, we talked about Whiteham versus Wigan. The other big game is obviously the one we got live on Sunday, Huddersfield. I mean, we've got 3 live games for this weekend, starting with Thursday night, Wakefield versus Hull. Looking forward to that one.
Hull, easy.
Right. Saturday afternoon, after Leeds United have finished, right, which could be exciting. Lee versus Batley, big party atmosphere.
Yeah, and full credit to Lee for free admission.
I know.
How fantastic is that?
It is.
Trevor,
the whole town
for us.
He is.
I listened to him do Lee versus Huddersfield on Saturday. Very excited. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Hey, by the way, me and Mark Wilson, we've got a side bet as well on Sunday. I've gone for Huddersfield to beat Lee.
Yes, well, I'm going for Lee.
This is the one, Huddersfield versus Lee.
Huddersfield for me.
Surely Leeds, I know you were unimpressed by Leeds on Friday, and I wasn't there.
All depends on Leeds' attitude and how they want to go and treat this game.
From all we've said throughout this programme about Huddersfield and the way their teams play.
Yeah, they can't look pressure at the ball. Huddersfield don't know what he's doing.
See,
I'm still going for Huddersfield. Am I bonkers?
Yeah,
you just answered your own question.
It was great on the way home in the car. I was giving him all the arguments he's given us for the last year and saying, are you sure what you are? I'll still have them, yeah.
So Huddersfield, don't let me down and put some decent sandwiches on. No, we just want more than a cup of tea. Take note from Steve Gill at Castleford Tigers.
To
put some great food up for the press guys.
So you write some good stuff about us.
Even Chris Chester was happy.
So I'm going Hull.
He's taking some out.
Hull, Lee.
His pockets with chicken drumsticks.
Hull, Lee, St. Helens, Huddersfield, Castor beat Carlins. And who else is there?
Wigan Warrington.
I'm going Wigan to turn Warrington over.
Yeah, I think Wigan will win.
I just think the pressurised thing and the get. I'm going for Wigan to beat Warrington.
We saw a flat performance from Hull last. I thought the second half was a bit flat. I think Warrington will be due a blip after Wembley.
Sadly, we've run out of time, so we can't talk about who's going to win the League One promotion final nor the League One Shield.
Ah.
Well, Toulouse and Newcastle.
There you go, well done, Phil. Cheers.
We'll be back then Thursday with Wakefield Hull, Saturday Lee Batley, Sunday Huddersfield Leeds, Monday we'll talk about it all from 6 until 8. Mark, thank you very much.
Cheers, man.
Gary Schofield, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Phil Kaplan.
Always a pleasure.
Steve Gill, thank you very much for your time. Season tickets on sale. Castleford fans, there you go. Get queuing outside.
Price is fixed.
Remember Hose Jungle.
Price is fixed, and you can expect a phone call off a player for doing it.
Oh, good. Oh,
to thank you.
Look
at that. We'll get Scotty to bring up our listeners next week.
What a threat.
Tune in next week or else. You don't know what's going to happen.